Something that has always impressed me and intimidated me is improv comedy. I've been to several shows where it's extraordinary to me that you can throw out any topic and they will turn it into a joke. So we're going to try something similar here where we have a whole list of prompts, which I have not seen. And the task here is for me to see these prompts for the first time and then somehow relate these prompts to the natural world, the murder of the planet, and what we're going to do to stop it. So we will see how this works. Again, I've not seen any of these yet. Very first one. So this is without a net. We become caretakers of the machine. Oh, that's an easy one. So what do all the so-called solutions to global warming have in common? What they all have in common is they take industrial capitalism as a given and the natural world as having to conform to industrial capitalism. We are in every way, we are from the most social to the most personal. We are more caretakers of the machine than we are of real life. What do you touch more? Plastic or human flesh? What do you touch more? Plastic or non-human beings? What do you have more relationships with? More machines or more wild beings? Right now, look around. How many machines are within 10 feet of you? How many wild animals are within 100 yards of you? How many machines do you know the names of? How many wild animals do you know the names of that live within 100 yards of you? In every way, the decisions that are made by this culture on both personal and social levels are far more about taking care of machines than they are about the living world. Number two. Fine-grained supremacy. Well, clearly, the central problem facing the world today is human supremacism, the belief that humans are fundamentally superior to and separate from the rest of the world. And there's also male supremacy. There's also, of course, white supremacy. There are all of these ways that we, especially white males, perceive ourselves as superior to everyone else. And there's often sort of a coarse-grained supremacy that we don't see quite so often, which is, you know, white robe buffoons chanting white power in mush mouth voices. And that's the sort of coarse-grained supremacy that we all think about. We all think about when we think of supremacism. But there is a more fine-grained supremacism that imbues I don't want to say every cell of our bodies, but most of the cells of our bodies, such that the ways that this supremacism acts out in everyday life, for example, and this is a trivial way of human supremacism, is that we commonly talk about the trees that, and we will talk about the land that, as opposed to the land who, or the trees who. And, you know, I get so tired of all the discussions of make sure to use somebody's personal pronoun if they decide that they're going to be called ji or zher, that we need to use that. What about the whole fucking rest of the planet? What pronouns do we use for that? It's it every time. And I think that we should attend to that. So there's a fine-grained supremacy that we see manifested. No, that's the point. There's a fine-grained supremacy that we don't see manifested, but is manifested nonetheless. Banning words, collapsing words, queering words. there is this Milan Kundera famously remarked that the struggle against oppression is a struggle of memory against forgetting. And if you can't speak of a reality, it's much harder to fight it. And if you can't speak of and if words are not a part of your vocabulary, we have words for those things that we are familiar with in many cases. And there's two directions I want to go with this. One is there is currently very strong efforts being made to make it impossible for women to talk about their reality. Organizations, even such as Planned Parenthood, no longer talk about they talk about pregnant persons. They don't talk about breastfeeding. They talk about chest feeding. Women cannot talk of menstruation for fear that that will offend the men who identify as transgender who don't menstruate themselves. And so women cannot speak of it for fear of making them feel bad. I just today learned of some women in Norway who were deplatformed, disallowed from singing their song called Vagina Anthem because it would make people who don't have vaginas feel bad. How are women to speak of or act against oppression against women as a group based on their sex when they can't even talk about the fact that women can get pregnant and men cannot? That's this one level at which we can talk about this. There's another level at which I want to talk about it too, which is there was a bit of a kerfluffle a year or so ago when a new edition of, I think an Oxford, I think it was Oxford, I'm not sure, Dictionary for Children came out that had a number of new words in it, a number of words removed. And the new words included things like, I don't know, tweet and selfie or things like that. And some of the words removed were acorn, lots of, I don't know, chickadee. I might be wrong on the specific words, but a whole slew of nature-based words were being removed from the dictionary. And that there is a level at which that is understandable because to relate back to the prompt a couple prompts ago, we are caretakers of the machine and we must speak about the machine and we must talk about the machine, but we must not talk about nature and we don't. Children today, there are studies a few years ago, many years ago actually, a study came out that showed that the average child these days spends 8 minutes a day outside. I found that unbelievable. If we just say it's 1 hour a day outside, that still contrasts dramatically with, at least when I was a child, where in the summer, I was outside from after breakfast to when it was time to come in for dinner from playing, and then I would go back out and play through the dusk. And in the winter, we were outside anyway in the cold, playing football in the snow or playing, having snowball fights or what's the game where you tramp out the circle and then you tramp out lines across the circle and then you play tag. You have to stay on the lines. What was that called? The point is we were outside constantly, and if children are not outside, then I suppose there's no reason for them to learn the word acorn. But this is terrible because if you can't speak about what you've lost, it's much harder to mourn it. And who living today mourns passenger pigeons? Who today mourns great herds of buffalo? Just three generations ago, my great-grandmother, my mother's grandmother, grew up on the plains of Nebraska. And when she was a little girl, there were still so many buffalo. She lived in a sod house, and there were still so many buffalo on the plains of Nebraska that whenever it would thunder in the summer, she would get scared that the buffalo were going to stampede and run over her house and crush them. Of course, that never happened. But how many people living in Nebraska today are scared they're going to get trampled by a buffalo stampede? And how many people today in Nebraska miss the buffalo? How many people in Nebraska even think about the buffalo? And of course, the next step, just remove it from the dictionary.